Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. And here I am, your Captain Joe, up in the captain's chair for our weekly time together live. As always, no matter wherever I am in the world, it will always be live, or as long as Truman and I can continue to work together to make that happen. And live on Voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the FM band, and streaming live all over the world by streaming from voiceofvashon.org. And as always, but it is a good thing for me to say it every so often, how grateful I am that all of Captain Joe's people, loyal and stalwart and true, continue to fall in for quarters every week with me. And I am not only grateful for that, but doing this broadcast every week is one of the anchors of my week, and helps me to be always steady as she goes, which is what you are entitled to expect and require of me. Greetings to the world from the Kingdom of Netherlands and the Kingdom of Sweden, where a binnacleist entry must be made, in that my Stockholm family has now become ensnared in the tangles of Omicron, the virus, and the report is that they are all treating or feeling as if this is just a bad cold, and I hope that that in fact is the case, and that it continues to recover just that way. At least the children have not gotten it. In good binnacleist news, on the other, a greeting of course is to Singapore on the other side of the world. And that leads me to good binnacleist news, in that I have, it's hard for me to accept that I am chronologically old enough to have great-grandchildren. But last night, a new member of Captain Joe's people arrived, and that is Isla. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. If not, somebody in the family will correct me. Isla arrived last night, and she is the new daughter of my grandson Joshua and his lovely wife Lauren. I say that it's hard for me to accept that I have great grandchildren. Obviously, I do, but I don't feel chronologically like that. And I, but then when I look at photographs of myself, I always like to believe that I look as I did when I was a cadet at St. John's College High School, and of course, that's a little bit of self-deception in which I indulge myself, and I know better. Anyway, welcome aboard to Isla, and for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list, you know what it is that you have to do in order to get yourself off of it. And happily, in this last week, we've not had anybody leave the binnacle list by crossing their own bar. So the arrival of a new great-grandchild and the recovery of those on the binnacle list who are in the virus category, let us make sure that all of this, you do what you're supposed to do, and that we get through to good times on the other side. I don't remember if I reported that Sailor had gone on an extended patrol, but if I did report that, I am now happy to report that he has returned. He, what happens is that when I go on a trip, and you all know that I reported from the captain's chair, both from SeaTac outbound and from the airport at Kailua Kona on the Big Island of Hawaii inbound. And when I gave my report from Kailua Kona, I had gotten a report from the young lady who takes care of my house and my animals when I'm gone, that a sailor had gone on an extended patrol and had not yet returned. Well, what he does is every time that I go away, he gives me, I think I've got it calibrated to about 5 to 6 days. And if I don't return by then he goes on an extended patrol and he doesn't return. This time he was gone for 7 days, 7 or 8 days. The traditional log entry when a sailor is AWOL and then returns is, if it is true, he is returned clean, sober, and in uniform. Sailor returned in all of those conditions. Well, he wasn't all that clean. He was looked like he'd been a little bit, not roughed up, but he looked like he had been living rough. But he was sober, and he was in uniform. He also was completely unrepentant. And so the conversation that we had when I held mast on him, when the conversation that we had was that he doesn't get to dictate my travel schedule or my schedule in any way, and that it is time for him to knock it off. His reply to that was, then you have to knock off going for any longer than 6 or 7 days, which, of course, I often am not able to do. So, sailor back, clean, sober, and in uniform. He is certain to repeat this behavior the next time I go away, which is going to be the end of February. And he has only lost a little bit of weight, which tells me that either somebody took him in and was feeding him and he then escaped when he felt that it was time, or that he was living off the land. So those of you who have animals that go in and out and who also forage for live fare, shall we put it, I'm watching him for tapeworms, and I have the medicine to take care of that should be disclosed. The locks at Sault Ste. Marie have been closed, and I'm going to talk just a little bit about ice operations up in the Great Lakes, because many people do not realize that, first of all, the Great Lakes freeze over, and on a really hard winter, which we may well have this winter, even Lake Superior freezes over, and that the locks which connect Lake Superior and Lake Huron at Sault Ste. Marie in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan are closed. These are locks which are operated, built and operated by the Army Corps of Engineers. And they connect the two lakes, which have a difference in height of about 23, 24, 25 feet. The number is not exactly engraved forever in my picture book of memories, but it's about something like that. When I was the captain in the Coast Guard cutter Northwind, the icebreaker that I commanded, one of the winters in the late 70s, I took her up into the lakes because at that time we were operating the lake system. We were running loaded ore boats from Duluth to the mill towns on the south shore of Lake Erie, in a demonstration project that lasted 4 or 5 years. And this was to see if we could do it, and if we could do it, what the costs were, both financially and in terms of damage to ships and in crew exhaustion in particular, because, of course, you're working in the dark, and many captains of ore boats did not like to work under the lights. So we discovered that we could indeed do it. I would form up a convoy of maybe 12 or 13 ore boats in Whitefish Bay, which is in Lake Superior, lock them down through the locks, and then reform them up as a convoy on the other side and work them through the system all the way to Lake Erie. It would take me about as long as a week or 10 days, if I remember correctly, to get them all down to the Cleveland area. and the and all of this was working through the ice. The lakes, of course, are freshwater, and the ice is only a year old, whereas ice in saltwater, especially in places like the approaches to McMurdo and Antarctica, some of that ice is multi-year ice, and multi-year ice is harder and more difficult to break through, often has no leads in it to open up to get through. So in any case, all of this is leading up to tell you that the demonstration project is not being run anymore. There are very few ships that operate in a hard winter in the lakes, and all of them have to be moved around with icebreaker escort. There are no super heavy icebreakers in the lakes anymore. And so because they are not moving taconite, which is iron ore pellets, we're not moving taconite during the winter time. The locks at the Sioux closed down. I really recommend that if you are looking for a great trip to take this summer and you have not selected a place that you're going to go, that a good place to go would be to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Go there after the black fly season, which is in the spring, because the bugs can get really pretty oppressive. So go up in the middle of the summer. There's no place nicer than a town called Paradise, which is up on the UP of Michigan. And then go across the UP and all the way up to the American Sioux. And that was where my headquarters was when I was the commander there. And when I left the Sioux, I was made an honorary citizen of the city of Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And that's an honor which I treasure to this very day. I love the place. I love the people. I certainly love the work. I had a wonderful crew. I had over 20 subordinate units as part of my command. And I would have gone there in retirement, except that I did not want to do another Sault Ste. Marie winter after I had been relieved in due course and moved on. And in fact, my assignment after that was right here in Seattle. So you go up in the summertime, the locks will be in full operation. You'll be able to see the 1,000-footers that go in to the locks, come out of the locks. They do this without tugs. The captains just put these enormous ships right alongside the wing wall and drive them right into the locks without use of any tugs, just the ship's own power, bow thrusters, stern thrusters, and ship's power. Some really wonderful examples of ship handling with very large, very heavy ships. And you can get right up close to the locks. You can see exactly how they work. And you can get almost close enough to the ships, especially if you're having drinks or a meal or staying in the old Ojibwe hotel. So, highly recommended as a place to go. And wonderful people up there. It is a piece of Michigan which is completely separated from the rest of the state. And the only other states that I can think of right offhand that are like that are Virginia, with the eastern shore of Virginia. And there's a little tiny piece of the state of Washington which dangles off of Canada called Point Roberts. And so Michigan, the UP of Michigan, is just a great place to visit, and I recommend it if you're looking for a place to go in the summertime. And I especially recommend that you go and watch how the locks operate. It, of course, will be all ice clear, and you'll be looking across to the Canadian Sioux. And I regret enormously that we no longer have what was essentially a completely open border. I went back and forth between the between my office and headquarters on the American Sioux to work with my Canadian colleagues and the Canadian Coast Guard over on the other side, back and forth without any concern that there was a border there. And I regret that we no longer have that capability. The I've been watching the repairs that have been made to the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris, and I am going to give just a little bit of a heads up on this one to say that there, I'm going to be doing a little bit more research on this, because you all will recall that 2 years ago there was a terrible fire, and one of the things that happened was that the lead that was in the roof melted, and an enormous amount of damage was done. So much damage, in fact, that there was a period there where the engineers were looking at the cathedral to see whether or not she could be saved. Now, this is a building which is hundreds and hundreds of years old, has gone through many, many restorations and renovations, and is worthy of every effort to make sure that it is restored to all of its former and medieval splendor. So when we are able to go back to Paris, and I hope that my ability to go back to Paris is not too far in the future, I want to go and see how they're doing with the work at Notre Dame, and I hope that they're not doing too much in the way of modernizing this. There's a tendency that I have observed in a number of these very, very old buildings. The Victorians were particularly enthusiastic about this, about making changes to ancient buildings to include some of the architectural fads of a particular era. The Victorians could not resist the temptation to do this to the to some of the ancient cathedrals and minsters in England, in Britain, and England in particular. And Westminster Abbey was one of those. Westminster Abbey had a Victorian porch that was installed during Victorian times. I'm hoping that the people who are working at Notre Dame are going to restore her to the way that she looked, rather than the way that some people may think we need to also include some more modern architectural features. What I hope is that they work on her in such a way that she looks much the same as she has since the beginning, almost since the beginning of time, and or at least recorded time, and resist the temptation to add just those little features, but using materials that will last for another 1,000 years. The San Francisco Bay Pilots are looking for some applicants to be apprentice pilots. And so I went on to the website to check this out, knowing that interest is high among Captain Joe's people about such things as pilots and pilotage. We've talked about a number of my contacts with pilots over the years. And I noticed that one of the things that they have done is to modify their experience level in order to attract more candidates, and that they are going to accept some experience as a chief mate rather than experience as a captain, a licensed master. I regret that this is going to have to be done. It may have to be done in order to get enough people in the trainee pool so that they have enough pilots to take ships across the San Francisco bar. It is a can be a challenging bar, especially when the wind is blown out of the west for several days and it piles up on that bar. Going across the potato patch can be a real challenge under certain weather conditions. But any time that we feel it necessary to lower experience levels is not a good sign. I believe that I have told the story, I'm going to tell it again anyway, of the pilot that I had through a transit in the Panama Canal one time. And that was with my Northwind. And I don't remember whether we were headed toward the ice going to by way of Hawaii or whether we were coming back from the ice. But anyway, I drew a Panama Canal pilot. And this was before we had turned the canal over to Panama. And so the pilots, all of the pilots were American citizens. And at that time, the pilots did not have to have had any command experience. And the pilot that I drew had only sailed as a second mate. He had never had a command of his own, and he had never been a captain. This was the same pilot who I got into a discussion with him, and I said, "Pilot, this is a relatively easy transit. It is beautifully marked, the channel depths and the charting, everything about it was a beautiful navigational situation." And he said, "But Captain, you just don't realize that right around those lock entrances, at the entrance to each one of those locks, there are secret currents that only are known to the pilots." And I said, "Well, pilot, I think I can probably pretty well figure it out. And besides that, here in the Panama Canal, you get pulled into the locks and you get pulled out of the locks." What I did not know then, because I had not yet taken a ship into the locks up in the Great Lakes, that first of all, there was no pilotage, at least for me, and secondly, no tugs. I just drove the ship in and drove her out and properly fendered and with everybody paying attention. But in any case, the San Francisco Bay pilots are now looking for people who can be apprentice pilots. And at least here in Puget Sound, so far as I'm aware, every pilot has a license and has sailed on that license as a captain. And in fact, has sailed on that license as a captain for a number of years before they can even become an apprentice pilot. I always like to talk about successful SAR cases, and I've got two of them here that I'm going to mention. The first one is the Julietta D. She's a bulk carrier, and she got into trouble off of The Hague in the Netherlands, and her crew had to be evacuated. She managed to get into a collision with another ship. And she also elided with a wind farm tower. So her crew had to be evacuated, and both the Dutch and the Belgian Coast Guard was involved, as well as Smit Towing. There's a wonderful film clip, which if you go into one of the search engines on you will be able to find this film clip. It shows the evacuation of the crew by helicopter and an incredible show of wonderful airmanship. And it also shows some of the rescue going on with shows one of the Smit tugs. And I mentioned the Smit Company here because this takes me to the book for today, and that is The Captain by Jan de Hartog. And the Smit Towing Company, the Dutch Towing Company, Deep Sea Towing Company, is the model for the company that is the protagonist, corporate protagonist in The Captain. The Captain is about a tugboat captain in the Dutch Deep Sea Tugboat Company, who becomes the captain of one of the tugs in the rescue convoy, in the convoys that had rescue tugs in the Battle of the Atlantic. It's a wonderful story, and it talks about the decisions that captains have to make, and and if it ever exemplifies one of the concepts to which I have adhered in my own command time, is that the captain shall show no fear. He does not get to show it. He may certainly feel it, and if he does, that's a good thing, because that's one of the things that are built into us to help us make good decisions. So the Smit Towing Company is the company that helped to put a line on Julietta D. She is now in port and no longer able to collide with other ships and allied with those wind farm towers. And the Schmidt Towing Company was the company that got her into that port. And I urge you to take a look at that film clip if you can find it. Julieta D is the name of the ship. And if you type that in, you should be able to come up with that clip. The other one is a chemical carrier off the port of Houston named the Ginga Caracal. And one of her sailors got burned in a chemical burn. And about 200 miles off of Houston, and the Coast Guard Air Station sent a helicopter out along with the air cover from a fixed wing. And the there is also a film clip from the installed camera. We have a camera installed right over the hoist on all of our helicopters, and it shows it's running all the time that a rescue is in process. And you get to watch the hoist as it's being made. And when we put a rescue swimmer in the water, you get to see all of that through this installed camera. And the disc that, or however it is they record it, I doubt they use discs now, but however it is done, are all then analyzed at the end of a mission to correct any things that need to be corrected, and are also used in writing up citations if, it, in fact, it is a rescue that's worthy of some sort of commendation. So the name of the ship is the Ginga, G-I-N-G-A, second word, Caracal, C-A-R-A-C-A-L, and this was a rescue just a couple of days ago, 200 miles offshore from Houston. And the camera shows the way that this person was rescued. It shows him coming up in the Stokes litter, being brought into the helicopter. It's a wonderful piece of work, and it is always my particular pleasure and my wish to be able to commend these incredibly skilled and brave helicopter crews that do this kind of work, and they do it day after day after day, and often get no recognition except the fact that they know that there is somebody or somebody's alive because of the work that they do. The magazine today is The Professional Mariner, and the lead article is in a section called Out Front, and it has to do with the awarding of a contract for the second of the heavy icebreakers that the Coast Guard is building. The first one is also being built by Halter Marine down in the Gulf. And unfortunately, even the first ship is still not under construction. And I long, in my black captain's, in this case, ice boss soul, to have a hand in getting that thing back moving, because each year that we delay in getting these ships and the ability to go back up into the high Arctic and into the far south, into the Southern Ocean, each year that we delay is a year that we're not going to be able to respond to legitimate pressures put onto us in the case of the Arctic by the Russian bear, and in the case of the Antarctic, of keeping open the supply line to our base at McMurdo. So I recommend if you can go to the Professional Mariner website. They have an online edition. Whether they will let you in if you're not a subscriber, I don't know about that. But in any case, you can take it from your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair that there is an artist's conception of what this ship is going to look like. They are very, very large. They're very heavy. They are not with the traditional direct drive electric, diesel electric drive, two propellers sticking out the stern. They're using what's called an azopod, two of them, that dangle down from the hull, and I have my real reservations about all of that. And we're going to talk some more about that as the construction of these things finally gets going, because it's got to get moving out there, troops, And otherwise, we're poor old Polar Star, as skillfully as she's being commanded by her captains and as skillfully she's being maintained by her crew, she cannot last forever. And it's beginning to look like we're trying to make that happen. So we've come once again to the end of our time together. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And as always, I am wanting everyone to take care of yourselves. Watch the six of those people for whom you are responsible. And it is, as always, I am on station and watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.